This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. There are lots of big changes to our finances this month. Some bills go up, one or two even come down. So energy prices are dropping, but council tax is on the way up, and so are most people's phone and broadband contracts. But this Moneybox Live podcast is for renters, because that one big bill has been rising at a record level. UK rent prices rose 9% in the 12 months to February. So if you're renting at the moment, how are your finances looking? And do you feel secure in your home?
It's harder than you'd think. When you lose your place of abode, you don't just lose your flat, but you lose your community, your contact with your friends, and it's quite tough.
Yes, being a renter can have an impact on your finances as well. Research shared with Moneybox Live has revealed you're more likely to be in your overdraft if you're a renter compared to people with mortgages. You're also less likely to have savings to fall back on in an emergency. Now, the average age of renters is increasing, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But most people begin their adult lives expecting to rent. Our reporter Ema Devlin has been out and about speaking to young professionals in Manchester city centre about their rental experience.
I mean, my rent's just gone up, which was, I guess, was expected.
And in terms of your like long-term personal finance, and like maybe saving to buy a house or for retirement, that sort of thing.
Oh, I've kind of written off any chance of buying a house at this point. It just doesn't seem possible at the moment. Like, it really doesn't.
And then, how does that leave you when you're older, do you think?
Come to that when we get there, but. Yeah, I mean, it is a worry.
So I need my parents to support me in terms of rent, utilities and bills. I'm taking care of the council tax. I don't think I can personally deal with it by myself because I just graduated having my first job and my salary wouldn't cover.
So at the moment, my situation is quite nice because I pay an amount all in. It would kind of be impossible to rent by myself. I live in shared accommodation at the moment. It'd be impossible to rent somewhere just by myself.
And the fact that you're renting at the minute, does that have you thinking about like your future and maybe whether or not you'd like to buy a house or what situation you might be in when you reach retirement age?
I definitely think about it, but it just seems unobtainable, shall we say. It just seems like a really far-fetched idea at the moment.
Well, listening to that and joining us to talk about how renting works and how it sometimes doesn't are today's experts in both renting and personal finances. I'm joined by Sarah Pennells, Consumer Finance Specialist at Royal London, by Dan Wilson-Craw, Deputy Director at Generation Rent UK, and Richard Donnell, Director of Research at the property platform Zoopla. Panel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you very much for joining us. Dan, what are renters telling you is the biggest difficulty they face?
Well, in the past year, the biggest story has been the increase in rents for people who are living in homes already, and their landlord is asking for a higher rent. Rents have been shooting up in the market for new tenancies for a couple of years now, but it's really being felt by tenants who don't really want to move, but they're facing extra pressures within the homes they're already living in.
Mm. Sarah, there are some pluses, aren't there, to being a tenant? You can move more easily, you're not responsible for repairs. We shouldn't talk about it in the whole programme like it's always a disaster.
Absolutely. And for some people, you know, renting is absolutely the choice. It's something they want to do. They see themselves maybe as renters for the long term. And as you rightly say, there is more flexibility. There's that freedom to move more regularly, certainly in theory, although obviously it depends on the rental levels. Mm. But it is also worth saying, and we heard that in the people interviewed earlier on, that there are some people for whom renting doesn't turn out to be as they expected, or they end up renting for far longer than they initially planned.
That's an interesting point, isn't it, Richard? Those were young people, and we do sometimes think of renting as a young person's game. But if you look just in England, the proportion of people aged between 45 and 54 who were living in the private rented sector, that's increased by more than 50% since 2011. That's according to the English Housing Survey. Renters are changing.
That's right. I think the pressure on all households, you know, particularly affordability pressures, means that the rental market is a tenure that people are either attracted to or maybe forced to go and seek more flexibility, whether that be There's many more older single people. Maybe through a mixture of health and personal reasons, but also it's also much harder for single people to buy property. So they're almost forced to keep renting. So it's absolutely important we don't think of the rented sector as just through the lens of younger people.
Sarah, I mentioned at the start that renters are more likely to be in their overdrafts. This is your research. What have you found?
That's right. So we've been looking at sort of the cost of living and how it's affecting different groups really since it started in February 2022, since the crisis started. And we have found really, I guess, over the last sort of year, maybe year and a half, that that pressure is really beginning to build on renters. So as you mentioned in the introduction, 40%, 4 in 10 renters say they are either overdrawn or have to borrow at the end of the month. Now, that's twice as many as the number of homeowners told us that they were in that situation. You know, renters are 4 times more likely to say that they couldn't afford any unexpected expense, either from income or savings, than homeowners. And, you know, a third of them nearly said they have no savings, compared to about 1 in 10 homeowners. So there's a real picture, I think, of renters having lower financial resilience, by which, you know, they are less able to cope with those unexpected expenses, less able to have that sort of safety of those, that sort of cushion of savings to fall back on, than people who are owning a property, even if they have a mortgage. So even though mortgage costs have risen, it is affecting renters disproportionately.
Thank you. OK, well, let's take a call. Our first renter is Ben, who lives in Devon. Ben, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, you live with your family. Tell me about your household.
It's myself. I've got a partner and 2 children. My partner's self-employed, so works from home, which kind of helps, in a way, keep down on the childcare costs, because she's there for when the kids get back from a primary school. So, it's kind of a nice little environment that we've got
at home. Now, you rented the same home for a number of years. Tell me what happened then.
Yeah, so ever since our kids were small, when they started going off to primary school, we were in the same little house, and had obviously rent rises every year, and were paying for our utilities, you know, the normal things you'd expect. But then out of the blue last year, we just got our Section 21 notice from our letting firm, saying that our landlord wanted to sell up. So suddenly we were in a situation of trying to find a brand new house with just 2 months to be able to try and get all that sorted.
And with young children, my heart sinks. But I'll mention that Section 21, I think we'll talk about that more later on in the programme, but that is effectively a no-fault eviction.
Yes, so I was told by the letting firm that it was because our owner wanted to sell the house, which I could understand, because, as you say, with everything going on in the mortgage market at that time, it would have been a very sensible time to be selling a house if I had one.
Did you manage to move? Did you find somewhere to go?
Well, we did. We had a few blips along the way. Unfortunately, my partner broke her leg and her ankle within a week of getting off Section 21. And although we asked for extra time to find her, to be able to let her go through surgery and everything, we got nothing like that from our landlord. So we just had to struggle on and try and find it and move the family with my partner, who only had the use of one leg. And thankfully my employers were fantastic. They gave me some extra time off, and I was able to cash some hours in and be able to do it. But yeah, it was very stressful. And then
it sounds it's, it what the about extra the children thing.
sorry,
I'm just curious, what about schools and things?
Oh, well, that's the thing, is sort of within this 2 months, you don't just have to find somewhere to live, you have to find a brand new school. I had to find a brand new school for my children that they could get to on their own, because my partner wouldn't have been able to drive or walk them to school in that time. Thankfully, they're old enough to be able to get themselves there on their own. But it was, a couple of once again, my employer were fantastic, letting me have some mornings off or start later to be able to get the kids to school while they were still learning the route and stuff like that. But it was a complete
very good
nightmare.
Very good to hear. Stay with us, Ben. I want to bring the panel in. I mean, Dan, Ben's family situation is like a snapshot of some of the challenges of the rental market.
Absolutely. This Section 21 evictions are so common that they're particularly common in the past couple of years with the mortgage market pushing a lot of landlords to sell. The treatment of tenants in that situation is awful. This is the reason why we've been campaigning to abolish Section 21 and make sure the tenants do actually have protections if their landlord wants to sell. But yeah, if you're a family in particular, and you know, it sounds like Ben had a very helpful employer, but not everyone can rely on, you know, no, the sort of the kindness of people to help you in that situation. This is a situation that's happening up and down the country.
I'm sure I'm sure there'll be landlords, you know, shouting at the radio now, saying that, you know, they're having a struggle as well. Perhaps they're selling up because of those rising mortgage costs. Lots feeding into it. But Ben, do you feel settled and secure in your new home?
To be honest, it's difficult to, because the way that the rental system works is you don't just get a rolling contract. You have to take on like a year's tenancy, and then some places just renew you for another year. Some places might then let you go onto a rolling one. So I'm just still sort of living in fear that it's actually due to come up within the next couple of months, that I'm going to get another letter telling me that that I might have to move on, or that the rent might be rising by an amount that I might not be able to absorb. But there is a nasty punchline to all this. Speaking of the Section 21, is that within 6 weeks, the property that we had to vacate was newly done up and available on the leading property sites for rental again, but for £150 more than we were paying in rent. So it's just, as I say, there's no real protection. The Section 21 is unfortunately a little bit of a joke in its current form.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us, telling us about that. And I do hope that your other half's leg and ankle is fully recovered. Thank you. Ben, then, he's lost his home. It's caused a lot of disruption for his family. It can, of course, be a challenge at any age, having to move house. Last year, we spoke to Paul, who was a renter in his early 70s. He was evicted from his home of 16 years, and that came very shortly after the death of his wife. He was found accommodation by his council, but it's some distance from his original home. And I caught up with him this morning and asked him to tell us what impact that move had on him.
It's had an amazing impact in that I've lost all my community. I've had to buy a car, and I sort of travel 12 miles backwards and forwards between where I used to live and where I live now. It's meant that I'm separated from what was my life. It's quite hard, actually. It's harder than you'd think when you lose your place of abode. You don't just lose your flat, but you lose your community, your contact with your friends, and it's quite tough, really. People don't talk about this very much, but I find it very difficult to restart again. But I am restarting. I'm having to make friends again and start a whole new life.
I'm glad to hear that you are managing to do that. You're still, if I could describe you this way, you're still quite young in your retirement years, and you can drive. Does it worry you a bit about what it might be like in maybe 10, 15 years' time when you can't drive back to your old community?
Yeah, it's really what's going to happen is I'll just lose contact with everything and everything that I used to do and people I used to know, and slowly drift back to living in my new community. It's a resettling, if you like.
Are you secure in the accommodation that you're in now? Are you safe to put down roots? Is that you for the rest of your life?
Yes, I feel much safer now. I felt safe in my other flat. I felt really it was my home. I know it wasn't my house. I didn't own it, but it was as much my home as anything else.
Well, that was Paul showing us that lack of security can be an issue at really any age. Shall we take a moment, though, and just catch up on where we are with changes to the law? Because there is a lot going on. So Ben was subjected to a Section 21 eviction, a so-called no-fault eviction. If you think you've heard the government pledge to ban those, then you are right, they did. Sarah, this is part of the Renters Reform Bill. It's still passing through Parliament. Just remind us what it includes.
Yeah, so as you said, the abolition of the Section 21 notice, I think, was the biggest measure included in this bill, certainly the most headline-grabbing one. Now, that is still in the bill. Last October, the government said that this would happen after some improvement in the court process, but it is still a commitment to do that. Now, a couple of other things that are included in this bill. Notice periods for rents to be raised will double to 2 months, and there'll be some other restrictions on how often landlords can increase rents. Also, landlords will have to join an ombudsman scheme now, whether or not they use a letting agent, which is different to the situation now. And then a couple of other things. There are going to be strengthened rights or increased rights for tenants to have pets, something a bit close to my heart, having a couple of dogs myself. So it's not that landlords will have to allow tenants to have pets, but they'll have to give them a speedier answer. And they can't turn this down for they can't be unreasonable in refusing the request for someone to have a pet. Because, you know, an upheaval can involve the whole family, and for an increasing number of people, that involves a pet as well as children.
Absolutely. Now, this is an England bill. Dan, that pledge to abolish Section 21 orders is, as we hear, at very least going to be delayed. And there's been more in the papers about this just in the last few days. The Housing Minister, Jacob Young, has sent a letter to Conservative MPs saying that the power would remain in place until an assessment had been made of the legal system to check it could handle the changes. Does that worry you?
It is very worrying. I mean, we've had this pledge from the government to abolish Section 21 for 5 years now. And in that time, countless families like Ben's have been evicted and, you know, then seen their homes advertised at a higher rent, which is something that in theory won't be possible under the reform. So every further delay is just putting more families at risk of an unfair eviction like that. So we do need to see the government speed up the process, bring the bill back to Parliament to be debated.
Well,
I
should make it clear the government says it is committed to abolishing no-fault evictions. A spokesperson for the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities told us the bill will abolish Section 21 evictions and deliver a fairer private rented sector for both tenants and landlords. They said the bill must strike the balance between delivering security for tenants and fairness for landlords, and that they will bring amendments forward at Commons report stage after Easter recess. So don't worry, we will of course be covering all of that here at Moneybox Towers. Richard, there are also changes being planned by the devolved government in Scotland for a longer-term cap on rents. Now, listeners there will know that there was a temporary rent cap and pause on evictions. That ended at the start of this week. Now it's legislating for a longer-term cap. What might that mean for renters and for landlords?
You're right. I mean, there's been a limit on how much rents can be increased during a tenancy that's been in place for 2 years now. There's new proposals published which extend rights for tenants, which I'm sure a lot of people would welcome. But there's also a lot more detail about more wide-ranging rent controls, both during a tenancy and also between tenancies. And again, the government's got rights to allocate certain areas as being subject to more rental pressure than others. So different controls might be put in place. So there's a lot up in the air at the moment around how much rents can be increased during tenancies and at the start of tenancies. And I think the big challenge here with this is it just potentially puts off investors, not just private landlords, but also corporate and institutional investors like pension funds, thinking, well, I could invest my money in England, where these sort of changes aren't being proposed, and probably potentially hit supply in Scotland. And we're certainly seeing some of the strongest rental growth recently has been in Scotland, where this uncertainty is meaning that sort of landlords are trying to push rents as high as possible to sort of to reduce the uncertainty they face.
And of course, we're seeing laws change across the nations. Wales has the Renting Homes Act. Northern Ireland had the Private Tenancies Act that came in last year, and that changed the length of notice to quit periods for tenants. So it now varies depending on how long they've been in the property. Things are changing, aren't they? The rental market, of course, isn't one straightforward option. There are lots of different kinds of landlords. Richard, you were outlining a few just there. You've got some with one or two properties. You've got huge companies investing in rentals. There is also, though, social housing, which is rented from housing associations or from councils at reduced rents. It's normally more affordable and usually more stable than renting privately. Before we came on air, I spoke to Judy, who's in her late 50s, and she lives in social housing in West London. She's paying about £680 a month for a one-bedroom flat.
I've been living here 5 years, It was in a bit of a state of disrepair. It has rising damp at the moment, and I've struggled to get my landlord to do the repairs. I need to move out of my flat soon, a total decant, and I'm waiting for them to do the damp works, which will be extremely disruptive.
Does the rent mean that you can live in London and be quite comfortable? Because that's a lot less than market rate, isn't it?
I've been able to reduce my hours due to a long-term health condition, and that the social rent has allowed me to do that. However, it is increasing year on year by significant amounts, I would say, whereas as I get older, my wage is actually, you know, putting me in a difficult position. You know, the rent has been capped. It was a 7% increase last year and then a 7.7% increase this year. That feels a lot for people who are generally at the lower income and more vulnerable end of working families.
Despite the increases in rent and the issues that you're facing, there'll be some people listening to this and thinking, well, yeah, you're lucky to have that security. Absolutely. Of social housing.
Absolutely. And I do feel lucky to have the security of social housing. But they're also lucky to have me. I've been paying rent for a long, long time, or decades, with these housing associations. The social rent has always been the backbone of alleviating high rents in London. And I think in some ways, social landlords are failing to go back to that original social purpose, really, of alleviating poverty.
So that was Judy talking to me earlier. Dan, Judy's finding the rent increases hard. She does also want repairs to her home, and prices are rising for landlords as well, social landlords, private landlords. Is it just inevitable that rents will have to go up?
It shouldn't be. Your landlords will have a lot of costs in terms of maintenance, but overall, the rents that are being charged in the market are far higher than what it actually costs to keep up a property. I think obviously the social sector needs funding. That there's a lot of post Grenfell work that needs to be done in that sector, but in the private sector there's, you know, we've seen house prices rise such a fast rate over the past decade or so. Landlords are in a position where they're they should be bringing in way more rent than they need to cover the costs, and there's really no excuse for landlords to skimp on maintenance.
Well, the National Housing Federation, just on social housing, told us social housing rents are regulated, annual rent increases are capped according to a formula set by the government, and they said social rents save the average household £5,000 a year compared to what they would pay in the private sector. And I think, Dan, I'll just put to you as well what the National Residential Landlords Association said about rising rents. They've made the point to us, it's not a sign of that landlords are profiteering. They say average landlord profits are at their lowest level since 2007, according to Savills. And they say, likewise, according to the English Housing Survey, the proportion of private tenants in rent arrears is falling. I'll tell you what, let's hear from a landlord now. Danny rented out his property for a few months, discovered his tenants weren't only failing to pay the rent, they were also not paying the bills, the utilities, and then they refused to move out. So I asked the obvious question, why didn't he evict them?
In my situation, it was my own home, so it was very difficult. Landlords are unprotected at the moment, especially when things start to get a little sticky, in that whatever a tenant does, perhaps it's non-payment of rent or whatever, it's regarded as a civil matter. But then if a landlord takes action, you know, perhaps wants to go in and change the locks or whatever, that's criminal. So straight away, the tenant has the advantage. And most tenants seem to know their rights in terms of the civil law and take advantage. So my view is there, the landlord is also unprotected. And also in a second way, they are unprotected because of the legal system at this end of the legal system is so underfunded. So that should you be in a position where you need to get a court hearing, file a notice, because the courts are so underfunded, it takes so much longer than it should. I mean, the guidelines from the Secretary of State is that hearings should be within 6 to 8 weeks. But My experience is a hearing took 13 weeks. And then beyond that, you then have this situation of the bailiffs are also underfunded as well, the county court bailiffs. So their period gets extended before they can take action. And the tenants know this. And they know this sort of from day one, that once they're in, they're going to have a good run at it, of can be there for quite some time until there's a knock on the door.
Danny there. Well, the Ministry of Justice has told Parliament that it has taken steps to review county court bailiff capacity, and it's introduced efficiencies and reduced the admin tasks for bailiffs. It says that will free up resources to focus on enforcement activity, including the enforcement of possession orders. Richard, we've been kind of documenting the difficulties for renters in this programme. That doesn't mean the market's working perfectly for landlords either.
That's right. I think, I mean, the biggest hit to landlords has been growing amounts of regulation, also then higher mortgage rates, which is really hitting the landlords. About a third of landlords that have quite high, large mortgages compared to the value of the property. That's where the real squeeze has been. But as you've been talking about here, there's then also then the risk that for whatever reason, you know, tenants are unable to pay the rent and they stay in the property. Mm. You know, the landlord may have a mortgage to pay themselves, and so the money's not coming in. And as you've heard, there's a real delay here. And again, what this has really driven is more and more landlords looking to do more and more referencing and chase after tenants who can pay the most, which might not serve the tenants that aren't on the highest incomes.
Dan, you're from Generation Rent. You're obviously someone who champions renters. We're almost out of time, but really, really briefly, people like Danny, they're not bad people who shouldn't be allowed to evict their innocent tenants. They're quite the opposite.
I mean, it sounds like Danny's been unlucky with who he's rented to, I think. But it is galling to tenants who, you know, most of us will do what we can to stick to the to stick to the tenancy agreement, pay the rent on time, and also go through very intensive, onerous, intrusive referencing processes. So it's kind of surprising to hear a landlord who might, you know, Dan, might not have gone through that.
Okay, let's take another call. Naomi's on the line. Naomi, hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, you're a first year student at Worcester. Tell me about that and tell me where you're living.
So I'm currently living in Stourbridge, which is, it's about 45 minutes to an hour drive to Worcester Uni. So it's quite a long journey.
Why are you living there?
Because I cannot afford to rent anywhere in Worcester because the prices are so high and my maintenance loan will not cover any of it.
So have you got a flat there? Where are you living?
I'm living at home with my parents, actually.
Right. That is a good way to save money. But that is such a commute. Were you not tempted to live closer to uni with your friends, be a bit closer to the nightlife?
Yeah, so me and my mates, we were planning on, like, finding an apartment or, like, a house to, like, live in. But unfortunately, the prices were so high that we actually just couldn't afford it. Between four of us, it was that expensive.
Naomi, stay with us. I'm going to bring our panel of experts in on this. Sarah, I was looking at the numbers and they're quite staggering. Across England, the average annual rent for a student is now £7,566 a year. The average maintenance loan is £7,590. That's according to Unipol and the Higher Education Policy Institute. You know, Naomi's not wrong. Renting as a student is not cheap.
Absolutely. And you can see why more students are doing what Naomi is and, you know, not renting near the university, but renting, staying with their parents. And our cost of living research is showing that a third of students are living with their parents or rent free with other family members. And so it's more common than maybe you think, but it's not just students who are doing this. Actually, 3 in 10 of all people aged 18 to 29 told us they were doing this either for the short term or for longer term. And as you say, I mean, hopefully it should be a bit of a chance to think about, well, what do I actually want when I rent? What will my first home be like? Where do I want it to be? And to get prepared both financially and in terms of knowing what renting involves, knowing your rights and knowing what the landlord should do for you.
Richard, student accommodation has become quite a specialist area for landlords, isn't it? Students don't just rent the cheapest flat in a student city anymore.
No, there's been a big investment into what's called purpose-built student accommodation. So we've seen a lot of private providers come in, some of them listed businesses, and that's really expanded on the sort of stock of rented accommodation that's owned by universities, or universities have transferred to specialist providers. And then there's not enough of this accommodation. So then a lot of students are forced into the private rented sector and typically you have to sort of share or live further afield just to try and keep their rental costs under control.
Naomi, I mean, I feel for you, university life, freshers year living at home. But I want to ask you a bit about after university. You listened to the programme so far. Presumably, once you graduate, you'll start to think about moving home, maybe not straight away, but eventually. How do you feel about the rental market?
I think it's very hard to find a place with the current circumstances, especially with like cost of living and things like that. Especially when people like my age, we're struggling to find places that we can actually afford to live in that are actually substantial homes. And it's like people are having to find multiple jobs just to like live. It's not easy.
What are you studying?
I'm studying criminology and psychology.
I suppose gold mining might be a better bet for finding a property afterwards. You're saving money by living at hotel mum and dad. Do you think that'll mean you're in a better position to buy a home one day than maybe your peers who are renting, who are perhaps getting into more student debt?
Possibly not. I think it's very much a toss-up when you're in the kind of situation, because obviously they're already on the housing market and I'm not. I've obviously got like I'm saving money to buy a place, but they've got the idea of how to rent and all of this other idea of housing and things like that.
That's an interesting point. Sarah, when Naomi graduates then, when she presumably rents a room at first rather than a whole house or a flat, what kinds of things should she consider?
I think there's quite a few things to consider, from sort of the deposit and making sure that the landlord is doing what they're supposed to do and putting it in a deposit protection scheme, and, you know, making sure there's an inventory of what's there when you start renting, through to things like budgeting and paying bills, especially if you're living with other people. So there's quite a lot to think about, but it's the sort of thing that if you actually invest a bit of time thinking about, you know, say, budgeting and how you're going to pay bills, that can really reap dividends when you start renting. It's always better to sort out these things when, you know, if you're renting with other people, when you all like each other at the beginning, rather than waiting for any problem to rear its head. And we've been hearing, I mean, some Amy's made the point that actually trying to find somewhere that's affordable, even with friends or other people that you don't necessarily know before you start renting together, is a challenge. But all the more reason then to actually agree between you how you're going to sort out the finances. And again, I know this is a really sort of tall order, but if you can build up some sort of financial cushion, because even though it's the landlord's responsibility to sort out the maintenance, just in case there are some short-term blips, that again will be something that I think you'll feel much more reassured about once you start renting.
Dan, what's your advice for Naomi when she does decide to move out of her parents' house?
I think one of the big challenges for anyone who's sort of moving to a new city to get a new job is being able to prove to a landlord or letting agent that you can afford the rent. And I think for a lot of people who will be new to a city, won't have an employer necessarily yet, or just have a job offer, they'll find that landlords or letting agents will ask you to provide a guarantor, basically your parents or someone else, you know, who might be able to guarantee your rent. That's something to have conversations about early on. And one thing we've seen in the past couple of years with rents going up is things like letting agents organising mass viewings of properties, and which puts a lot of pressure on people to make a snap decision about whether they want to take a tenancy in a property. Or we've even seen bidding wars. So the property gets advertised at one rent, but then agents or landlords invite people to bid as high as they can. And so I think one thing that's really useful, valuable to do is to be really clear with yourself and with your flatmates what your budget is and how high you're willing to go and what you're willing to compromise on as well.
That's a useful tip. Naomi, are your parents happy for you to live at home for as long as you need, or are they talking loudly about wanting a spare room back?
No, they're happy for me to stay at home and for as long as I need it, because they're understanding how difficult it is for me at the moment.
I'm sure a lot of parents listening will have the same understanding. Naomi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that is all we have time for in this Moneybox Live podcast. Thanks to everybody who took part, and huge thanks to our panel. We've been hearing from Sarah Pennells from Royal London, Dan Wilson-Craw from Generation Rent UK, and Richard Donnell, Director of Research at the property platform Zoopla. Don't forget to listen on Saturdays when Paul Lewis has Moneybox for you just after midday. And if there's a story you want Paul, me, or the team here to take a look at, then please do email us. It's moneybox@bbc.co.uk. In this podcast, the producers were Sarah Rogers and Neil Morrow. Reporter was Ema Devlin. Production coordinator, Sandra Hardiel. The studio manager was George Willis. And our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
Hi, this is Kirsty Young. I just wanted to let you know that Young Again, my podcast for BBC Radio 4, is back.
I'm telescoping two bits of the story together.
That's okay. It's only memory.
It's only show bits. We can say what we like.
In Young Again, we're joined by some of the world's most intriguing people.
Bill was the CEO at Microsoft at the time.
And I ask a simple question. If you knew then what you know now, what would you tell yourself?
Be very, very careful about the people you surround yourself with.
I gave too much power to people who didn't deserve it.
Subscribe to Young Again on BBC Sounds. I'm looking forward to your company.